Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Men with the Golden Tongues. I am your host, Micah, joined by my co-host, Brad.
Oh boy.
Oh boy, indeed. We have one of the unofficial James Bond movies to talk about today, starring Sean Connery as James Bond. The title of the film is Never Say Never Again. Never.
Never.
Never say
never. Say never, never again.
Okay.
Never.
There's an interesting bit of history regarding this this movie. If you've ever seen it and said, wow, this broadly, in broad strokes, seems like the plot of Thunderball, in which the evil organization Spectre steals a couple of nukes, Nassau, yacht, profit.
Yeah.
Then this should be familiar to you. Brad, would you like to tell us the history of Never Say Never Again, the 1983 James Bond, in quotes, movie?
I would, and we've touched on this both when we talked about Thunderball and when we talked about Octopussy. So what had happened was, back in the day, Ian Fleming had like a all-night drinking party with his buds, Kevin McClory and Jack Whittingham, when he was, Kevin McClory came up with the idea, a plot for a book, a James Bond book. And Ian Fleming forgot who came up with what in this like jam session that they had, but he used the plot of the movie, or the plot that Kevin McClory laid out, to write the book Thunderball. And McClory sued him. He was able to win the lawsuit. And so when they went to produce Thunderball, Kevin McClory had a stake in the game, per se. And so they were required to list him as the sole producer of the film. And part of the settlement is that not only was he named as a producer for Thunderball, the movie, but after 10 years, he could then take the Thunderball plot and make his own James Bond movie if he wanted to. And eventually he wanted to. And so we have Never Say Never Again, starring Sean Connery, who did this because he was still really petty towards Cubby Broccoli. He was still harboring ill will, because of course, I don't know if we touched on this a lot when we first did You Only Live Twice, but part of the reason that he was irritated in the role as James Bond is not only because of the extra press scrutiny that he's getting, but also because he felt he wasn't being fairly compensated, given the success of the movies. And he always held that against Cubby Broccoli and Harry Saltzman. Of course, Harry Saltzman wasn't with the Bond franchise at this point. But of course, Kevin McClory being a dick and Sean Connery being kind of a dick, decided to make this movie Never Say Never Again. As Micah said, it is a James Bond movie, but it is not considered to be in the official James Bond canon because it is the only James Bond movie not produced by Eon Productions, which is the Broccoli family production studio that has produced all the official James Bond movies. But they wanted this movie to run up head-to-head against Octopussy and let the viewers decide which the real James Bond was, and they figured they had the edge because they had Sean Connery at 52 coming back to do this movie. But Never Say Never Again got smoked at the box office compared to Octopussy, and it's not a great film. And I can going into this, you could be lulled into a false sense of security because you're thinking Sean Connery is James Bond. That's good. Max von Sydow is in this movie as one of the, you know, villains. Okay, we love Max von Sydow. He's a fantastic character actor. You also have Klaus Maria Brandauer as Largo. He's probably the best part of the movie, quite frankly.
He kind of is.
Yeah. So, and then you're like, oh man, Irvin Kershner directed this. He directed the best Star Wars movie of all time, Empire Strikes Back. And I can understand why you could be lulled into a false sense of security about this, but that's because you forgot that Empire Strikes Back is literally the only good movie that Irvin Kershner ever directed. His most notable film, besides Empire Strikes Back, and this, is RoboCop 2. The last feature film that he would direct.
This film is weird. It's weird.
It's super weird.
It has the same, well, not the same. It feels like a bad James Bond film because it is a bad James Bond film. But at the same time, like, I don't like despise it.
This movie really makes me appreciate the fact that the Broccoli family hires amazing people. And I'm not just talking about cast. I'm talking about all aspects of the production.
Yeah.
Because even bad James Bond movie are still filmed well. Like, the cinematography is great. The sound design is excellent. The sets are really good. Like, there are memorable things about them. The stunt work is fantastic. Like, even in bad Bond films, there are these, like, steady, consistent things that you can latch onto because the Broccoli family hires talented people. That's not what happens in this movie.
This movie feels like a made-for-TV movie.
Yes, thank you. That's actually, a perfect summation of how this movie feels compared to a real James Bond movie.
Yeah, and not like a James Bond rerun on TBS. No, this feels like it was specifically made to have commercial breaks. Like, it was sponsored by Kleenex. Like, this is very, very low budget. And it's just...
But it wasn't.
Right. And that,
$36 million dollars.
Right.
In 1983.
Like, it feels like an off-brand flea market James Bond movie. And even down to some of the casting, right? Like, well, most of the casting. Okay, you got Sean Connery, right? But he's, you know, he's old. And the it was in Diamonds Are Forever. And that left a bad taste in my mouth. So this is left a, you know, I'm going into this feeling some kind of way about it. But then you get to Kim Basinger as Domino, who Kim Basinger might be the worst actress in the world.
She won an Academy Award.
So did Nick Cage.
That's true. always your trump card that you have in your pocket.
Like, that doesn't mean anything.
Whenever somebody brings up an inexplicable Academy Award winner.
she feels lifeless in this. Like, she feels you know, everybody gives Denise Richards a bad rap. This performance is no better.
She has weird facial expressions in this movie.
Yeah, I think it's just because she has a weird face in this movie. That, like, I don't know what it is, man. But look, if you want to consider this, like, this came out in 1983, in the era of the goofball Bond, Roger Moore. If you want to categorize this as like one of the goofy James Bond films, okay, then it's not it. Then the overall experience isn't horrible. But like you said, even the goofy James Bond films, even the bad James Bond films, they have stunts that are cool. They have, you know, they're shot in locations that are beautiful, and they don't have.
You know what's funny too? You know what they could have done? The biggest problem, the biggest error that they made when they filmed this movie is that they tried to do their best impersonation of a James Bond movie when they could have just taken Thunderball and made a different movie out of it.
Yeah.
Like, it still could have been James Bond, but it didn't have to feel like a James Bond. Like they tried to follow the James Bond formula to a T.
Yeah. And even putting James Bond in ridiculous situations where he has to face off against the villain while playing a video game. It just.
But that shows how cool and modern they are, Micah. Video games. By the way, this episode brought to you by Centipede.
That's right.
The classic arcade game.
Bernie Casey is Felix Leiter. Edward Fox as M. What are you doing? Alec McCowan as Q. I mean,
don't you mean
almost
Algernon, Micah?
No. I literally almost threw up in my mouth when I heard him speak. Pamela Salem as Miss Moneypenny. Those three just, there's a joke on Family Guy about how it's a cutaway gag, right? And one of the characters says, this doesn't feel right. It's like wrong sounding Muppets, right? And then it's like, it cut to a gag of like the Swedish chef with a deep voice. Like, wait a minute. Like, that's just off, right? Like that doesn't compute. That's what this is. This just doesn't compute. This M doesn't, that's not M. And well, it's weird because this series does recastings all the time.
Why it's weird? Because they take the M and Q personality and reverse them.
Yeah.
Like M is like the one that's like doting on Bond and insulting him and, you know, and belittling him. And Q's like, oh, he's like, well, now that you're here, I expect for two sex and violence to happen in this movie. Chip, let's do it. You know?
Blimey, the CIA called me, I'd be on the first thing smoking. Like, what the fuck is this? What are you doing? Oh, my God. Moneypenny, you know, we remember Moneypenny as flirty and sassy. This Moneypenny is, I hope you're going to be okay, James, because that bit of sarcasm just flew right over my head because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing because this is stupid. Like, this movie is so weird, man. This movie is so, so weird to me. This was one of the first James Bond movies that I saw. Oh, I distinctly remember seeing it over my aunt's house. Because it was playing on television, and that's why I legit thought that this was like the made for TV version. Like, I didn't know this came out in theaters for a long time.
It did.
And, it feels very low rent. In terms of, silliness, I gotta tell you, Barbara Carrera as Fatima Blush. Look, if this is one of them silly James Bonds, I like that character, man. I like that character a lot. She's like Xenia on a top with personality, and she gets a pretty cool death.
It's like I said, they nailed the one thing. The only thing in this film that they nailed is villain casting.
Yeah. And Klaus Brandacher as Maximilian Largo. What? Okay. Yeah, he was charismatic. I liked him in this movie. That's for video, folks.
He gives Jonathan Pryce a run for his money.
Yeah, he does, man. And look, if you're going to go silly, if you're going to go over the top, go fully over the top. Look, as much as I bag on those Roger Moore movies, they were silly and they went over the top. Like, a little too over the top. When you got a really cool stunt scene and then you accent it with a slide whistle, that's a little too over the top. But this one was trying to go over the top and didn't quite go as much as I would want it to. It's like a bad parody. It's like an unfunny parody. It feels like it's supposed to be a parody, but it's not funny. So, I can't say that I recommend it. Now, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. where does it stack up in your personal battle of the bonds between Octopussy and this?
Oh, Octopussy is better than this, no doubt. Octopussy is at least fun to watch. Like this one.
Yeah, this is just kind of boring.
I'll tell you what, the one thing I was surprised at, though, for a movie that lasts 2 hours and 15 minutes, it didn't feel it till the end. The end slows down considerably.
Yeah, I felt it. I felt it at the end. The last paragraph of this synopsis that I'm going to read on Wikipedia is maybe four sentences. That's like
20 minutes
of film. That's like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Last 30 minutes.
But I was surprised that it was as long as it was. Because like I said, the first half, two-thirds of the movie actually moves along at a fairly brisk pace. They don't linger on any one scene too long, except for the video game scene.
Yeah.
It's a little lengthy. But yeah. This film.
Yeah. So let's get into it.
Never, never say never again. Never, never say never again.
Opens up with no gun barrel. The closest thing we get to a gun barrel is the Orion logo. The star spinning around in a circle.
I will say there is something comforting about that Orion Pictures logo. So many 80s films.
It's nostalgia.
It is.
Nostalgia is a hell of a drug, man. It opens up and we get this panic shot.
Never say never again.
I was going to skip the song. I really was.
Well, it plays over the opening sequence.
It does. And I was just going to not mention it at all.
And if you were going to pick a song to play over top of a action sequence, a prolonged action sequence, this would be one of the last songs. That you imagine if, and again, we can use Octopussy because it came out the same year. Imagine if in Octopussy they played All Time High over the opening sequence of the film while Bond was flying in the little Aerostar plane. That's essentially what you get here, because Sean Connery and his toupee are storming this compound.
It's really bad too.
It's really
it's really bad.
It's very, very bad. But yeah, he's storming this compound, and the music that's playing, it doesn't fit at all.
Yeah, it doesn't. Like, James Bond is blowing people up and shooting people. Never, never, never say never again.
Pow! Never, pow! Never say never again. Next match!
What the hell? But, okay. We see James infiltrating this compound. At one point, he climbs a telephone pole to get a vantage point, and then kind of rappel in, right? Like he's going to put something over the cord and slide in. But he puts a metal hook onto an electrical cord, and I'm like, wait a minute. You're going to die. That doesn't make any sense at all. He infiltrates this compound. He doesn't die. He infiltrates this compound and kills a bunch of dudes. And I'm like, because it's been a really long time since I've seen this. I haven't seen this since 1986, 87, something like this. And I distinctly remember seeing it because that theme song is just maddening.
Funnily enough, this whole opening sequence reminds me of the scene in Commando when Schwarzenegger's storming the dictator's mansion.
So I'm looking at this, right? And it's meant to, you know, the audience is meant to believe that this is actually happening, right? So we go in and we see James infiltrate this house and he picks up a gun and you hear, you know, gunshots and stuff like that. But he's just pointing the gun. Like, you don't see a muzzle flash. And I'm like, yo, is this movie for real? Like, what is this? What's going on? Because you, the audience, are made to believe that this is actually happening. This is real.
This is the WCW production values of James Bond movies.
And I'm like, wow, this movie is really, really bad. Like, it's worse than I remember. And James sees a hostage and he goes in and he unhooks one of the arms of the hostage. And the hostage pulls out a knife and stabs James Bond. And James Bond is like, oh, you got me. And then we cut to this guy who I'm going to call L because he's no M. He don't look like an M to me. They're reviewing it. And it turns out that this is a training scenario. And, you know, because James Bond is old now. They acknowledge the fact that Bond is up there in age, that he hasn't been in the field, and this is a training scenario just to see if he could go back in the field. Even though he's pretty much just a teacher. L is like, oh, you would have died. It's like, well, I didn't die. And just, all right. Connery is just as smug as he was back then. You know, Mr. I know everything. I am correct about everything. But it just is weird. Him talking to this guy, like, he even looks disgusted talking to L right here.
His lisp is also out of control in this movie. I will have to mention there is one good line in this entire scene, because L is talking to Bond about how I know what your problem is. Too many free radicals brought on by red meats, white bread, and dry martinis. And Connery dryly glibs, I shall cut off the white bread. That's not bad. It's not bad.
He has a couple of one-liners and some pretty good timing that show flashes of
past brilliance. Know,
yeah, it just is.
I have to remind everyone that Connery's 2 years younger than Roger Moore.
Yeah,
and again, in Octopussy, Roger Moore is no spring chicken, and they definitely use some camera work tricks to mask his deficiencies.
Yeah,
but Sean Connery feels much older in this movie than Roger Moore does in Octopussy.
Yo, I thought Sean Connery was 69 in this movie.
He was 51 when he filmed this. He was 51. By the way, a fact that they remind you of, because the first 30 minutes of this film comes perilously close to fourth wall breaking on a consistent basis. With all of the heavy-handed jokes about, oh, I'm still pretty good and this, that, or the other, and fucking right. Q talking about, oh, now that you're here, gratuitous sex and violence is sure to follow, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'm just like, all right, guys, we get it. Sean Connery is old, and he used to be James Bond. All right.
Right. He damn near looks in the camera. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, they come this close. They get right up to the line stepping over it.
What do you, before we continue, what do you think of Sean Connery's performance as a whole? I know you explained it a little bit, but
I think he does care more than he did in Diamonds Are Forever. Like, this isn't his worst performance.
Yeah. Like, he looks like he wanted to be there. More so than Diamonds. But at the same time, like, this shit is bad, yo.
Like, he's trying. He just doesn't, like, he's, Sean Connery at this point is like a major league pitcher who's been in the league for like 13 years that used to throw like 98, and now he throws like 92. So he doesn't quite have the same fastball, but he's added some other pitches to his repertoire to still make him dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he put a bad wig on those pitches. baseballs. Jesus Christ. He looks like, it looks like a Ken doll's head. Like, this shit does not move.
So my wife was like, she's like, oh, she's like, I don't like Just for Men James Bond. I was like, it's cool that you think that's his real hair. It's like mission accomplished, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, the wig, this is a worse wig than Diamonds.
Yeah, I think so. So he fails this training scenario, and Fake M is, you know, he does the whole, oh, you've got to eliminate the free radicals, right? And so he sends Bond to a health clinic outside of London to get back in shape. When James Bond leaves, Moneypenny's like, well, what's happening, James? And James is like, I've got to eliminate some free radicals. Like, you be careful. Like, all right, get out of here. Fucking, I don't even know what else to call you because I don't know what's cheaper than a penny.
a peso, money peso.
Money peso. There you go. So, James Bond is at the clinic, and we cut to a quick scene of Spectre and Max von Sydow as Blofeld. You know it's Blofeld because he has the cat. Because
again,
Blofeld,
you didn't need to, like, this is the copy paste part of it that I'm talking about.
Right? It's like, well, how will we know that he's Blofeld? Oh, well, just give him the cat. Then you'll know. I mean, you could just say that he's Blofeld and, you know, we'll have to believe it. But no, just say, he's got to have the cat. Max von Sydow actually reminds me a little bit of, the look actually reminds me a little bit of Christoph Waltz's Blofeld.
Interesting.
I think it's just the beard and the fact that it's not like a bald guy. I don't know.
Max von Sydow did an amazing job of looking the same for essentially 25 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it just like the Ark of the Covenant. You're just like all at once. We cut to Bond in the hospital, and he bumps into this one nurse that he's flirting with. And I'm like, yo, why is this dude who is like 75 years old still hitting on these chicks? And then I went to look it up, and I'm like, oh, wow, he's only 52. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. They do some flirting. We get a quick cut of... So it's right, like it's James Bond, right? I'm James Bond, you know. I'm a pussy magnet, you know. And he chats up the woman, and then they do a hard cut to James and the woman, and it's a close up shot, and all you see is his face, and you roll back in mid coitus, and then he pans out, and then it's a sight gag, you see, because you thought that they were having sex because he's James Bond, but in actuality, she was giving him a bear hug. The most sensual bear hug anyone has ever given anybody. She comes back later. It is presumed that they have a sexful night together. And there, Bond witnesses a mysterious nurse named Fatima Blush. Fatima Blush, giving a straight up like beat down on a patient in a nearby room. They were making a whole lot of noise in that room.
The walls were not that thick to keep that padded noise out.
Yeah, apparently not. Especially because it looked like it was across the street. Like, because he's looking out the window. and into another window. So I don't know.
And by the way, so this the guy's name that she's that her patient, his name is Jack Patachi. And he had an operation to get the bluest eye that I've ever seen.
And not only is it the bluest eye you've ever seen, it is one, the iris is gigantic, and two, it's based off of the president's eye. So the president in this world has a gigantic blue iris.
And like when I say blue, it's like indigo. Like that, yeah. Like that's the color that this thing is.
It looks like a marble stuck in this guy's eye. It looks weird, man. So yeah, he sees this nurse beating the shit out of Jack, and the man's face has been bandaged. After Blush finishes her beating, and it turns out that this guy is working for Spectre. Spectre got him hooked on cocaine or heroin. So yeah,
woke up with addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. How timely.
So they probably started by getting a loose doctor to prescribe him some painkilling drugs. And just spiraled from there.
So Bond sees Jack using this machine with the presidential eye. And Bond is seen by Fatima Blush, who eventually sends an assassin to kill him. So Bond is, they're looking for him, right? And she recognizes him. So she's looking through binoculars, and James Bond is hiding, but he didn't duck under anything to hide.
He's just in the shadows.
He's just in the shadows. He took the Drax approach and is just like, if I stand still, they won't see me. I've mastered the art of standing completely still so that I'm invisible to the naked eye. Oh, wait, you got night vision. Okay, well, there it is. And there's my whole face. Here's my whole doctored up, heavily made up face for you to identify.
An assassin to try and assassinate him, and hijinks ensue. Because you can't just have a brutal fight. You have to have a gimmick fight. But it's like, all right, we're in the weight room, so I'm going to try to kill you with the barbells. And then I'm going to punch this guy with some dumbbells. Let's move to the kitchen where I can throw boiling water at this guy and all sorts of kitchen utensils. All right. Now we're in a medical lab. I'm throwing beakers of shit at your face. Now I threw pee in your face. Now you're going to run into a wall with chemicals and somehow die.
So, the fight happens like just like you said, right? Just as ridiculous as you said. The guy's being pinned down by a Smith machine, and he's getting his ass kicked, right? Then James Bond throws a liquid at him, which you might think, oh, it must be boiling acid the way this guy is reacting, right? No, it was a vial of James Bond's urine. It was a vial of his urine. Like they set that up earlier. They set up Chekhov's urine earlier in the movie. And this is the payoff from it. He threw pee in his face. And while, yes, this would be pretty fucking traumatic for me to have urine thrown on me, I'm not going to flip out like this.
You're going to claw drink. Oh, God. And then back up so violently into a shelf of fucking chemicals and beakers and shit that the glass from the beakers literally get embedded in your back,
right,
to the point where you die.
Yeah, the beakers are weak enough to break if they fall on the floor, but strong enough to pierce your back. All right, dude. All right, movie. All right, you're silly. You're silly. You're wacky. I get it. I see what kind of movie this is now. This is a wacky pee throwing movie.
M is very upset about this.
M is pissed. And Blush and her he kills the guy with P indirectly. P slaughter. And Blush and Jack, who is a United States Air Force pilot, Jack has undergone the thing to make his eye match the retinal pattern of the president, and he uses that to circumvent iris recognition surgery, security. at the RAF station. It's a military base in England. And he does so, and he goes in there, he uses the iris or whatever to gain access to the machine. And when he's there, he replaces two AGM-86 cruise missiles that are supposed to be, you know, just dummies. He replaces them with live nuclear warheads. And then he's able to steal the warheads. This is kind of weird, right? So he does this thing and it replaces it. The computer is like, now replacing dummies with live warheads.
No one's being notified of this.
Right.
When this is happening, like, I understand that, like, the big safeguard is that the president has to be personally there in order to do this, which why the president would have to be in England to arm American nuclear warheads, I don't know. Anyway, so the president of the United States has to be there. No one's notified, like, oh, by the way, guys, the president's arming the nuclear warheads.
Right.
Okay, good.
Oh, God, I am very happy that real life is not a movie.
Thank goodness.
Could you imagine?
It's stupid. That's a very lazy.
It's stupid. Like, even for a movie, like, I can suspend disbelief, especially in a James Bond movie. You have to. But this is just dumb. This is just lazy.
And then not only that, but they, like, so the missiles are armed. And then they're taken, like, they're being flown by the Air Force, I guess. And then they fire the dummy missiles for whatever training exercise they're doing. And then somehow Largo's boat is able to take over radio control of the missiles and put them into the sea where they can be retrieved.
Yeah, nobody noticed that? Like,
Well, no, they eventually did. I mean, as the missiles were going down, like, oh shit, this is not right.
Yeah, but then they didn't do anything.
Well, then until they waited for the ransom note to come.
Yeah, they waited for the villains to be like, hey, we got this, and here's the serial number to prove it. Like, oh, that's where they went. Damn.
I like how when Blofeld sends the video to the UN Security Council, no one freaks out until he shows, like, the stock footage of the mushroom cloud, and then everyone loses. It's like, we lost these weapons, we can prove they're yours, we're gonna ransom you for, was it 25% of your country's, you know, profits from oil for the next however many years, and like, all the stuff's happening, then people are like, yeah, okay, seems legit, all right, understand, if you don't do this, then this will happen, and then, like, fucking stock footage, like, whoa! Like, I couldn't see this as an outcome. I thought you were just going to hang on to him for a while. I didn't know you were going to use him. I like how Blofeld also goes through the specific tenets of, like, it's like he's presenting a book report on Spectre. It's like, all right, now you see this is the extortion and this is the terrorism. That's the E and the T, Inspector. And if you guys don't comply with our demands, then you're going to see what the R looks like. And that's revenge.
Revenge on who?
Right, revenge on you for not giving me money.
Yeah, I guess. I think Blofeld doesn't know what the word revenge means.
I don't think he does either.
So yeah, like, all right, to go back just a little bit, Jack Patanchi, he does this thing right, and he's successful in his mission, and now he's driving away, right? And, you know, the geniuses at Spectre are like, well, he did what he had to do. That's called a loose end. Fatima, go tie up that loose end. So Fatima's like, all right, I'll go tie up this loose end in the most practical way possible. I'm going to follow him in my car and I'm going to drive up next to him. Right. This is what she does, people. I'm going to drive up next to him. I'm going to take a snake that I have in the back seat of my car and I'm going to throw the snake in the car, which will cause him to careen off the road, hit one of the magic movie ramps that are in all movies, flip into some sort of building. And then Fatima goes over finds her snake A-OK in the wreckage, plants a bomb, and then blows up the car. Because that's the most practical way to do away with this guy now that you are done with him. This is ridiculous. Like, this is just silly, right? I don't know, man.
It's the snake that makes it silly.
Yeah, it's the snake.
Like, she could have just like run him off the road into the movie ramp and followed along with the rest of the plan. I feel like the snake was something that was given to her to enhance her character, but it was used once and never seen again. So its purpose for being really doesn't make any sense. But whatever movie.
And look, before you people are like, well, you guys are wrestling fans. Jake the Snake had a snake. He had Damien. Yeah, but his name was Jake the Snake. Like, that's all you need. Like, if her name was Fatima the Snake Blush, then the snake would infinitely make more sense.
Plus, we also, at one point in time, saw the snake attack Randy Savage, like, legitimately.
Right.
In the ring. So we know that the snake is dangerous.
Right. This thing.
The snake, again, it wasn't even the snake. Like, she didn't use the snake to assault him. Like, that was a distraction.
Yeah, she just threw it in there. She literally could have thrown, like, a cigarette butt in there or something.
Yes, he actually could have. Or shot him.
Oh, right, right. Throw a bullet at him from a gun.
The snake. The snake is untraceable. Why did he create off the road? We have no clue. There's no evidence here as to why that would have happened.
Man, why did this thing blow up? I don't know. I wish there was some sort of bomb residue around. We'll never know. Cars just spun. And in any other movie, that crash would have resulted in a car blowing up, right?
Also true, yes. In any other Bond movie, especially.
Right. So.
But then the snake would have died. But then she couldn't have brought it back for the never time that she did. None of this makes any sense. They're overcomplicating the villain plot in this movie. In Thunderball, it's easy.
Right.
It's simple. They give the guy plastic surgery and train him for 2 years to be an exact duplicate of this guy. And then he flies the plane and lands it. And then they kill him by drowning him.
Right.
Easy. Plausible, sort of.
Right. Sort of. It's a little more plausible than having your eye surgically removed and then redone to be the president's eye. Where did you get the president's iris from?
Also, great question, actually. That's a fantastic question that just we're assuming. Well, Spectre has it, naturally.
That's where the counterintelligence part of the Spectre comes
That's
in.
That's right.
God
Good
damn it.
Lord.
Like, even if you said it, I would have been okay with it. But you didn't even say it.
Right, and you took the effort to explain all the other letters.
Blofeld comes up and is like, he gives the book report, and he's like, I want to extort billions of dollars from all the NATO governments. Blush kills, what's his name? So, under order of the Foreign Secretary, Lord Ambrose.
Weird. By the way, I like how in all these Bond movies, and this goes back to the Eon ones as well, like, the Americans are always, like, portrayed as being, like, completely inept, and the British are like, we'll take care of everything. Like, the CIA is not going to run in and fucking blow shit up in real life.
And that's, I mean, I kind of like, it's kind of a commentary on America.
It is. I get that part, but it's still funny.
It's very, I love it. We're just a bunch of fucking Yankee cowboys going to blow shit up all the time. Yo, Marines. Like, Pierce Brosnan's like, wait, y'all were there all this time? I'm just going to go bombing around in it. Like, what? That's not... You can't even say drive a car without using the word bomb? Like, what is your problem, CIA?
Though I will say, of all the Bond movies ever, they give Felix the most to do in this one.
Yeah, yeah. I love my Black Felix in this movie.
The first Black Felix.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Wright can suck a
Black
dick.
Phoenix, Felix, and it doesn't even count.
Nope.
God damn it. under the orders of the Foreign Secretary, Fake M reluctantly activates the 00 section. I thought the 00 section was alive.
Oh no, he had deactivated it. So Bond was teaching.
I thought he was teaching 00s or potential 00s.
No, he was just teaching regular British Secret Service people. Other MI6 agents.
What is this James Bond in particular going to teach people?
Mixology.
Ass backwards into good fortune?
Mixology. That's the class that he ran.
We'll get to a mixology question that I have later on. So he reactivates the 00 program, and Bond is assigned the task of tracking down the missing weapons. He meets Domino, Jack's sister.
Oh man, you're skipping over Mr. Bean, huh?
Oh yes, Rowan Atkinson. This is his first movie.
He was 28. He looks 40.
Yeah, yeah.
He just has one of those faces, I guess.
He's another one of those dudes that just looks the same, except it's old.
So he was in three scenes in the movie. Mm-hmm. Which is weird because I seem to remember him being more prevalent, but he wasn't. He was only in three scenes in the film. Again, a character that really didn't serve any purpose at all.
I mean, it's weird to have a character that's meant to be comic relief in this, like it's to relieve tension, you know, but this movie is damn near a comedy. So you generally don't need a comic foil in this very comedic movie.
There's also a scene that passes by here where we follow Largo onto his ship, which is, instead of the Disco Volante, it's the Flying Saucer in this one. And it's even bigger than the Disco Volante was in Thunderball. It's like an enormous fucking yacht.
Yeah.
And he has like this office, and he also has like this like revolving wall that can go away. And he has a one-way mirror that looks into his girlfriend's dance studio. If you're going to have a one-way mirror that sneakily looks into any room, I have to imagine there are better choices than the dance studio.
Hey man, everybody's got their kink,
I guess.
And apparently Largo keeps it really, really cold on that yacht.
I guess so. You also get an insight into Largo's mania, I guess you could say, because he gives Domino this priceless necklace called the Tears of Allah. It would matter later, so pay attention, kids at home. And she's like, "Oh, but what if I leave you?" Like joking, he's like, "Well, then I'd cut your throat," and then just kind of leaves it out there like that. Like doesn't laugh, doesn't leave me like doesn't say it with says it with a hint of malice in his voice. Yeah. And he's just like, "See ya."
I mean, she, you know, to Largo's credit, like, she kept pushing him. Like, "No, seriously, but what if I left you? No, no, no. Okay, I'm not joking. What if I left you? What would you do? No, no, give me an answer as to what I would do, what you would do if you left me. I would fucking kill you. Is that what you want to hear? Is that what you want to hear? I would slit your goddamn throat. Now, can I get back to work?
I've got voyeuring to do."
Right. Largo looks like Elon Musk to
me. older version of Elon Musk.
He looks like an older Elon Musk to me, man.
I'd like to believe Elon Musk has a yacht with a secret one-way mirror into a dance studio. That's not a stretch for me to believe that.
So let's see. I'm trying. Okay, so we're at the point where Elon Musk threatens her, and then we get to the Algernon scene.
Wait, fuck this Algernon scene. This sucks.
It does suck.
Imagine if Q was like James Bond's best friend. That's basically what this scene is.
Yeah, like if he was James Bond's like fat fuck up best friend. right? Like the leading man always. Imagine if this guy was James Bond's turtle from Entourage. You know what I mean? Like,
I must say there, James Bond, I can't wait for you to finish your mission.
Like, I was. I love the Q scenes. I love the Q scenes. And this has got to, this is an abomination. He gives him an exploding pen.
And a watch laser.
Yeah.
He downgrades his watch. I don't know what Sean Connery is wearing throughout the bulk of this film, but I have to imagine that the watch he gave him was actually a downgrade from the one he was wearing at the outset.
It looks like a downgrade. It looks like a digital Timex. I mean, I can't really tell. Because it's the shot isn't close up, but
well, they couldn't get any watchmakers to do any product placement in this movie, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And then there's a joke about you know, like, whoa, what's this dude? Don't touch that. That's my lunch. But this is
it's the friendly version.
Right.
Well, you see, what you do is you stick it up your nose and it clears your sinuses because I'm cold in this basement and I've got a sinus infection. Cheerio! Bye, chap!
Fuck you, Algernon.
Yeah, I hate this scene, man. I hate it. God damn it.
What the fuck is an Algernon, anyway?
Right.
Algae. Fuck out of here.
Oh, my God.
He does
God.
Give him a rocket pen, though. That is true.
He gives him a rocket pen, which you know, comes into... That's Chekhov's rocket pen. Bond is informed by Nigel Small Fawcett. Oh, you know what that is. Mm. Okay, all right. I just put that together.
It's not
I just
for just
the, put it together.
The ridiculous names are not just for the ladies, Micah.
Okay. Bond is informed by Nigel Little Penis of the British High Commission that Largo's yacht is now headed for Nice, France.
This is Fatima Blush tries twice to assassinate Bond before he leaves Nassau.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's in Nassau.
Yes, because him and Felix are trying to figure out what the next step is, and so Fatima encounters Bond. Like, she, like, meets him at a bar, and then she's like, hey, stranger, do you want to go on a boat with me? And he's like, sure, let's have sex. And
No. She doesn't just meet him at a bar. She is, what is it? It's not windsurfing, is it?
Water skiing.
Water skiing. She's water skiing. She hits a water skiing ramp that leads into the bar, and... Is she magically, I guess, she gets off the water skis. Like, is she doing it barefoot?
No, she had skis on.
Yeah, she's got the skis on. So she's water skis up the ramp and literally into James Bond's arms. And then says, hey, you know, who are you? Oh, I'm James. And you want to go on a boat ride with me? And then James Bond, always led by his big faucet, is like, sure. It's the weirdest, like, meeting that I've ever seen in my entire life. But, okay, whatever. He goes on a boat with this stranger because he's James Bond, right? And they make some innuendos about going down on each other. Oh, well, you know, oh, you're going down into the water. Well, when you're going down on someone, you've got to have a snorkel. When you perform cunnilingus on someone, you've got to be protected, you know, because that's what going down means. It's cunnilingus. Like, that's what I feel like all the jokes in here are. Like, they're just waiting for someone to explain what the double entendre is. Like, that's how poorly they're set up. But, all right, whatever. Apparently, he is blowing her back out. And then they go underwater for a bit, and then she leaves him for dead, right? She puts a shark tracking device on him.
She does. It's so silly. It's so silly. And then, like, so they're investigating the ship wreckage.
Yeah.
And she sneaks this, like you said, a radio tracker on to his air tank. And then she rolls out while he's not paying attention. I don't know how you can get away that quickly snorkeling, but all right.
Yeah.
And then, like, her captain dude on the ship, like, activates the sharp tracker at, like, the right time. And then sharks with, like, radio backpacks start coming after James Bond. A lot of them, too. There's, like, six sharks.
Oh, shit. This is a lot of underwater scenes in this.
Not as many as in Thunderball. And the one thing I'll give this movie credit for is at least during the underwater sequences, they have a soundtrack that's a little bit more driving instead of the entire time, which helps make them not feel as slow as they are. But yeah, this is like a 5-minute underwater chase through the boat against sharks.
Yeah.
Till he figures out that there's a tracker on his air tank, and then he just tosses that in the boat and then he gets away.
Yeah. And then he sees a fishing line and is pulled to safety from a nearby fishing a woman who was fishing. Who he flirted with earlier. And he was like, I told you you'd catch me later. Ah.
And then they go to have a sexiful time together.
Yeah, because that's what happens.
And this is weird because Fatima sees them pull up, like she thinks she's killed Bond. She's celebrating. She's like dancing around, being all crazy and shit. And then like she sees Bond and this other chick like pull up the port, and she's like, oh shit, that's fucked up. And then the next scene is them walking back to the hotel, and Fatima's wearing a completely different outfit.
Yeah, like completely different. Like not even close to what she was wearing. She was wearing NWO white, and now she's wearing NWO red. Like, it's completely different.
And it's like, and literally, like, she's like, oh shit, he's still alive. Let me change clothes, and then let me go plant this bomb in his hotel room. And that's what she does. And Bond goes up to the woman's hotel room that he's with, and the bomb goes off. And he's like, oh, glad we decided to bone in your room, not in mine. And that's the end of that. The two assassination attempts.
Yeah,
of James Bond.
That was something. Good Lord.
Yep. So now France.
This is where they go to France. And he joins forces with his French contact, Nicole, and his CIA counterpart, Felix Leiter. Felix being played by
Bernie Casey.
Thank you. So Bond goes to a health and beauty center where he poses as an employee. Trying to see if I missed anything here.
Nothing of importance.
Yeah. So he's spying on Domino and he's like, hey, black guy, you like white women? Check this out. And he's like, look at this chick and look at this guy and look at this yacht. That yacht, by the way, was owned by some like arms dealer or something like that. I saw in IMDb trivia, like it was weird. And then that guy ended up selling it to Donald Trump, who bought it because Donald Trump knows arms dealers. The president knows arms dealers. And two, it's a big ass yacht. And that's all you got to do, right? Like you see something big, then it's like he wants to buy it. It's really weird.
I think it looks like a small cruise liner.
Yeah.
It's huge.
So
he's massaging Domino, posing as an employee.
Yeah, because James Bond just cannot not be a pervert. Like, he can't do it. And I guarantee you, like, I read that Sean Connery had a lot of creative control in this. More than anyone probably should have given him. But yeah, he's massaging the shit out of her. And it's like, come on, James, what are you doing, bro?
I'm really bothered. Like, so at the end of the scene, like he rolls out and then the actual masseuse comes in and she's like, what happened to the guy that was massaging me? And she's like, oh, the dude I passed. And she's like, yeah, like he doesn't work here. And like, there's this like shock look on her face. And like, she looks like mortified. She's like, holy shit, that dude just violated me.
Yeah, she just got raped.
But then that turns to like that sly guy. I'm just like, no, that's not okay.
Right. Like
you don't know what his intentions are. Like, do you just assume that he's a spy that was getting information out of you, so you're cool with it? No.
By the way, what's up with this staff, man?
She did totally like the woman did totally like cut, like she opened the door. She saw down this long hallway that he was clearly giving her a massage. He's like, oh shit, I got, like, as soon as he sees her, he's like, oh, I gotta go. And she's just like, that's weird. What a normal everyday occurrence.
Yeah, man.
Like, I'll think nothing of it.
Like, just no reaction whatsoever. All right. And then, yeah, like you said, she's just like, that boys will be boys.
But it was after like a good 5 seconds of like, oh my God, I can't believe that this stranger touched me under false pretenses. And then she just like, oh, he's a, what a cad guy is. Whoever he is, I'll meet him later.
Right. Whoever this strange old hairy man with a weird toupee who was obviously trying to disguise himself by putting that fake hair on his head.
That asked me very pointed questions.
Very poignant, very specific questions about my boyfriend that no one else knows about. Oh, yeah. So, what's Largo up to? Oh, well, he's having an event on his yacht. Wait, how did you know Largo? Like, okay. All right. He gets the information that Largo is hosting a game of Baccarat or a game of Texas Hold'em or a game of something because it's a James Bond movie and there has to be some sort of casino and an event going on there because this is cut and paste.
Again, to be fair, the casino scene is in the book as well, but still, you don't have to use it.
Yeah, you don't have to use it. There's one funny little bit where Bond is infiltrating this place and he gives this guy a silver rectangular object and says it's a bomb and it's on a some sort of level and the detonator's on a level and if you move it ever so slightly it's gonna blow up. And then the guy is just like, I'll just hold it. And then they do a little comedy callback to that, which is amusing if this was a comedy movie. He had a pistol. Why did he get rid of it?
I don't know. And he got rid of it like...
like, and he put it in a champagne bucket.
In the middle of this casino, like, nobody's going to... Oh, a gun! What is that doing here next to the champagne? Oh, that's probably how we remove the cork. Pow!
Right.
So the
right.
Champagne opener. This fucking Luger pistol that Orson Welles was carrying around for some reason.
So Bond is doing the James Bond thing, right? He's walking around, gaining reconnaissance, and I fucking domino.
Creeps on her from like the way he introduces himself. He like appears as if from the side of a centipede machine.
Yeah. So and, Domino is playing. Domino is walking around this casino, and all of a sudden she comes across an arcade cabinet which has centipede on it.
No. It is an arcade full of centipede cabinets. Like there are like literally 50 centipede cabinets. It's the only game in the arcade. Is centipede. And there's 50 of them.
Yeah, it is, because I'm looking at the sides. Yeah, wow. And then, yeah, you're right. He's just like,
hey.
I know that was weird of me earlier. Not like right now. This isn't weird at all, right? I think I owe you an apology.
No, not even an apology. An explanation is his line. Right. I believe I owe you an explanation.
I believe I owe you an explanation. You see, when I see a pretty woman, I just feel the need to grope her.
Why would you think that's appropriate? Well, my name's Bond. James Bond.
So they go to the bar, right? And look, forgive my ignorance.
This is your question. Okay, I knew this would be your question when you said you had a mixology question.
Forgive my ignorance, please. James Bond orders a drink, whatever. Domino orders a drink and says, put Worcestershire sauce in it?
It's common in a Bloody Mary, yes.
The stuff that you season steak with?
Yes, it flavors a Bloody Mary. It keeps the Bloody Mary, because the Bloody Mary, like, it's primarily like tomato juice and shit like that. It's very acidic. So the Worcestershire sauce, which she mispronounces really poorly, by the way. She's like Worcestershire sauce. It's Worcestershire. Worcestershire sauce. Shut up. But yes, it cuts back on the acidity of the Bloody Mary.
Is it normal for people to get double?
If you're a fucking savage, yes. Not a normal person. Well, first of all, don't drink Bloody Marys anyway. They're gross. But secondly...
Of course they're gross. They have Worcestershire sauce in them. What the fuck?
But, and like the joke is, she's like, he's like, do you want to drink light or heavy? And she's like, light. And he's like, all right, I'll take this light drink. And she's like, give me a double Bloody Mary. And he, of course, gets the joke out here. Like, I'd hate to see what it's like when you order something heavy.
Oh, my God. All right.
What a bizarre drink to drink, by the way. Like, there are people that I know that drink Bloody Marys, like, as a breakfast cocktail, because that's primarily what it's for. I don't know too many people that drink them in the evening.
Yeah, so it's like a brunch thing?
Yeah, it's like the harder version of a mimosa, basically.
I imagine you order it with a steak and eggs, and then you just pour it on your steak. It's got Worcestershire sauce in it. I'm sorry, yo. That's just gross to me. That's really gross. Why don't you just put some Heinz or some A1 in it too?
If it was if this movie was made in 2018, when she ordered that, he would have been like, should have had a V8. But yeah, Bloody Marys are gross, guys. Don't fucking drink them. They're disgusting.
I'm looking at pictures of it, and it's got celery coming out of one.
That's a garnish. That's a normal thing.
It's got shrimp coming out of one. Yeah, it looks like a V8.
It is. Like I said, it's primarily like tomato juice, vodka, some other shit, fucking seasoning of some kind. I can't remember what seasoning you put in a Bloody Mary, but there's usually seasoning.
Worcestershire sauce. That's what you put in it.
In Maryland, the people usually rim the glass with Old Bay as well. So,
look, I like Old Bay as much as the next person, but goddamn, that really bothered me because I don't drink.
Her pronunciation of Worcestershire sauce bothered me.
So they're at the charity event, and our hero and villain meet, and they do the dick measuring contest thing that is in these movies, right? No, that's fine. Whatever. I'm fine with a dick measuring contest in a James Bond.
And again, normally this is like a hand of chemin de fer or poker or blackjack or, you know.
Right.
Something normal. But this is the new hip James Bond.
Yeah, this is you know, Pac-Man's all the rage and the kids love the video gaming, so.
Why didn't they play each other in Centipede?
Yeah, why didn't they?
Let us compete for the high score. Begin. But no, he has Largo in all his philanthropy and nuclear weapon stealing and fucking businessing and doing all the stuff that Largo does, being the number one guy at Spectre, aside from Blofeld, has also found time to design a very intricate video game.
Yeah.
As well.
Using a holographic technology that won't be seen for another 30 years. They're playing a complicated game of Risk where you fight for control of different, it's called domination or world domination or something like that. And you fight for control of a country or whatever. And apparently the game consists of shooting polygons, and whoever shoots the most polygons is the winner. You have two nuclear missiles that you can use to distract the opposing player, and a shield that can be used to deflect the missiles. It's a stupid-ass game. And apparently, if you are losing, then you get an electric shock while you're playing. And house rules, if you let go of it, then, you know, you forfeit. James didn't know that. He let go the first time, right? And Largo's like, would you like to play again? And
Largo does the dick thing. And as someone who teaches a lot of people how to play board games, I'm always mortified when this happens. When you miss rules that are important. Because like he explains it, and then like Bond fucks up, and he's like, by the way, I did not tell you that if that there's an electric shock that is delivered, but because you feel the pain that your troops feel, so being as you did not know this, we will begin again. do over. Mulligan.
I chalk that up to him fucking
lying. Oh, he is. I get it. I get it. But it's still dumb.
It's still dumb. Very stupid, though. You know what else is really fucking dumb? The fact that James Bond gets annihilated the first two times he plays it, and then he's like, let's play all or nothing for the rest of the world. And
he becomes a fucking savant.
And then he's a master domination
at the game that he's played twice.
Right.
Against the guy. And again, like you say, it's not just that he won. He obliterated Largo. Like, if you look at the score counter, it's not even close. Like, Bond's got like 90,000 points and Largo has like 20,000 points in the last game. Because he was fucking sharking him the entire time. I've played domination before.
You're right.
I just didn't want to tell you. But I invented this game. Yes.
Because he's like, oh, now that I know that the shield is a variant of the gun barrel. I know the gun barrel. I used to do that. Over a decade ago. It's like riding a bike. So you see that the shield is a gun barrel and becomes a savant. Fuck out of here, man. And
Largo's fantastic at this, by the way. Like you said, you mocked it earlier in the film, but as he's losing, like he's like shaking on the controls, and then like Domino's like looking freaked out. She's like, oh my god, like he's gonna die. And he's like,
Meanwhile, Sean Connery is looking like he's trying to take a shit. Like, he's holding this thing like, and Largo is just like cool, calm, is like, beat me, motherfucker. My dick is the biggest. Ah, you know what? Maybe it's not. That's okay. I got money.
Oh my god. Yeah, and Sean Connery forfeits, you know, $250,000 to have a dance with Domino because he needs to deliver information in secret. By the way, I really enjoy how like Domino's legit worried about Largo, right? Because she's like, oh, I've never seen him this bad before. Like he's cool and collected. She's like, he's incensed. And Bond's, and she's like, my god, my boyfriend is so mentally unstable right now. But let's dance the tango, James Bond.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
They're dancing. He's delivering, he's disseminating information to her. And she's a little resistant, but he's like, but I'm James Bond, so you have to believe me. And it's like, okay, I believe you. Afterward, we see, what's her name? Fatima and Largo talking, and earlier Fatima was like, he gonna fuck your woman. And he was like, no, he not. And then she comes back and she's like, he gonna fuck your woman. And he's like, you know what? Maybe you just want to fuck him. He's like, all right, well, I'm gonna give you that chance. You got one more try to take him out. And she's just ecstatic, right? So she goes off, right? Bond gets his cigar case back from that guy. The joke is paid off. And he goes back to his villa and he finds Nicole, his contact, is dead.
Again, this girl was in one scene aside from this. Why are we supposed to care?
Right. Like, okay. And it's a very poor, like, rendition of a drowning, you know what I mean?
It's like a really bad, like, fucking, like, smash cut to like the underside of this water table that she's laying in, all dead and shit.
Like it's completely obvious that it's, you know,
it's supposed to be shocking, but instead you're just like, wow, that was really jarring. Like that's stupid. Why do I care about this girl again? Where's Felix?
Is it nighttime or is it daytime?
So it's nighttime when he goes to the casino, and then like I guess from the casino to when he gets home, it's like the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, this
movie, clearly they did not bother with a continuity expert.
No, they didn't. And this is what we're talking about. Like even the bad James Bond movies, like they at least someone cared about it. Like nobody cared about this. Nobody cared about this enough to actually pay attention. I don't know. So the girl that nobody cares about is dead.
And Fatima Blush is swashbuckling away from the house. And I'm using that term in the most pointed sense possible. She's wearing a pirate outfit, guys.
But I don't want to be a pirate.
She's wearing a puffy shirt and black hammer pants and heels.
Oh, Jesus. She runs away. She gets in a car. James Bond gets into his Q Branch issued motorcycle, and they have a chase. And this chase, what do you think of it?
It's all right.
I mean, it's fine. He rides down some steps.
You know, it's probably good by the standard of this film.
Yeah,
like if the bar is set by the bar that this film creates, it's fine. But it's whatever.
Yeah.
The bike has like a fucking rocket thruster on it that he can use, that he does use during the chase. And try to trap him in a tractor trailer, and he's able to ramp out of the only tractor trailer that has a fucking door that you lower to the ground with a ramp and then raise back up again instead of having a gate that comes from the top. Bridge. Right.
What the fuck?
great design choice, fellas. Hope we don't try to capture anyone with a vehicle in here that can use this as a ramp to get out, which he does.
Oh shit. At one point he wrecks, and he gets up, and Fatima is there, and she's got a gun trained on him, and she's got him right there, right? So tells him to open, spread your legs, spread eagle, because I'm going to shoot you in your balls. And James Bond is trying to stall. And she basically is like, you know, pretty impressed with you. Not a lot of men can blow my back out, but you did it. And she was like, now tell me, I know. And she speaks in the third person for some strange reason. She's like, and I know Fatima was the best lay you ever had. And so fucking James Bond is like, well, there was this one girl in Philadelphia.
I knew that it'd trigger you. I knew, that statement would trigger your ass.
Like, come on, man. Ain't no woman from Philadelphia better than this. No, I refuse.
Not only that, James Bond.
Right.
Is not gonna go to Philadelphia.
Exactly.
At any point in his life.
Like is Philadelphia, like, is it like Philadelphia, Italy? Where is this fictional Philadelphia that one, James Bond is going to, and two, is finding a beautiful woman at? I don't know. She gets pissed, and she was like, no, you know I'm the best. I'm the best lay you ever had, and you're gonna write it down on a piece of scrap paper. You're gonna be the best lay I ever had, and you're gonna write it right now because I'm stupid for some reason.
This was the most ham-fisted way to bring the pen into the equation.
Yeah,
that,
man.
I could possibly imagine.
Like, this is just bad, yo. This is bad writing. This is piss poor writing. I just don't. All right. And then he comes out and he's like, he pulls out his Union Jack exploding pen, and he shoots it at her, and he hits her in the abdomen. And it doesn't do anything. Like, it pierces her, right? You see the blood, but it doesn't do anything. And she just laughs it off. And she's like, yo, that's what you're trying to do to me? And he's like, he's turning white, right? Because he doesn't know what's going on. So she very, very slowly takes proper aim with her gun. And then all of a sudden, boom, she blows up, right? And James Bond's delivery on this line, not quite perfected yet. It's pretty good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was a nice little callback to, you know, this device not being perfected. And not perfected? Yeah, no shit.
And meanwhile, like, immediately after this, like, here come the fucking French cops. And out of a side door, Felix is like, hey, buddy, I've been here the whole time. And James Bond is like, what the fuck? Like, I was about to die.
Yo, he calls him out and was just like, I just wanted to see how he was going to handle the woman. That's all.
What?
It's a dick move, Felix. Yo, like, I was Felix. About to die.
Oh shit!
And then Rocky and Apollo Creed leave the scene of the crime incognito together.
Yeah. They strip down to their underwear and they do the trainer and Little Mac thing after the third boxing match that you have, where Little Mac is running in that and he's just being chased. Or he's chasing the dude on the bike. That's what they do in this movie. And they get away. We cut to an underwater scene of Bond and Felix trying to get on that big-ass boat. Bond, I believe, is able to get on, mm-hmm. but Felix is incredibly inept and can't follow the guy properly. So he gets left behind. How convenient. So Bond is there and he's walking around and he meets with Largo and Largo is showing him all his cool shit, right? So Bond eventually goes and gets changed and he meets with Domino, and apparently it's really cold there because you can see Kim Basinger's nips through that leotard. Like, it's like wow, okay.
Censors missed that one.
Yeah, they did. or maybe they didn't. They were like, whatever, yo.
It's 1982. We're fine. 1983, we're fine. It's all good.
So Bond meets with Domino in her dance studio and immediately knows that the place is bugged. Where he has a suspicion. So he turns on the porniest of porn music that ever did work, was composed for fucking. Like, if I was Largo, I'd be pissed too looking at that shit. Like, yo, did they just turn fucking music on? Like,
and then he kisses her because he's like, hey, he's like, I'm intentionally trying to provoke a response, which he does.
Yeah, after molesting you without your permission earlier, I just want to make sure that you're cool with me kissing you. I mean, I damn near had a finger up your butthole earlier in the movie, but can I kiss you? Because I want to make your boyfriend jealous. And it works.
This is too clever, because what happens is Largo gets pissed. He goes to the dance studio. They're already gone. So then Bond uses this opportunity to pull a fire alarm to clear out the control room. And then he sneaks into Largo's like little secret like office computer room to send a message out. Like, he's trying to send a message to, you know, Felix and MI6 to let him know where they're going.
Yeah.
And so Largo's like, he's pissed and the music's going on. He takes like a fucking metal rod or whatever and starts smashing shit up because he's pissed off at James Bond for making a move on his lady. And then he turns off the music, and he hears the alarm going off. So he didn't hear the alarm because he was in the loud dance studio with the porn music. And then that's, he realized he's
not very safe, by the way.
Right. And he realizes what James Bond has done.
Yeah.
And he's not like overtly upset about it, but like he gets it. And then like when they get off the boat, like he's like him, like with Domino, like him and Bond and Domino, they're like, oh, they're all cool.
Yeah.
Till they get inside.
I think that Elon Musk here appreciates the one-upsmanship instead of, you know, just killing the guy. He appreciates the gamesmanship he outsmarted me. Well, I'm going to outsmart him next time, right? Because that's the hubris of the James Bond villain, is they not only want to destroy James Bond, but they want James Bond to know that he's dumb and they are smart. Eventually, they go to Palmyra, where one of Largo's base of operations.
We're in North Africa now, by the way.
In North Africa. And there's some banter between Largo and Domino. And eventually, I can't remember if he hits her or something, but
no, he doesn't hit her. He's like, the jig is up, James Bond, and he gets him like locked up. And then like he takes her and he gives her this priceless like statue that Napoleon used to own, right?
Yeah.
And then he's like, you betrayed me. I'm never going to forgive you for that, for this. So like you were my most priceless possession besides the statue. And then he kisses her forcefully and then knocks the statue out of her hands.
Yeah.
And just to prove a point, I guess, like he doesn't care about what he holds to be priceless. Right. And she's like, you're crazy. And he's like, yeah, maybe I am. Maybe I am crazy. See, I like this guy.
Yo, this guy is wonderful, man. The villains in this movie are great. Like, like you said, it's everybody else that has a fucking
like
problem.
he delivers that line so unremarkably.
Yeah,
like it's fantastic.
Yeah. So apparently, there's a bunch of traveling Arab people
who are looking to buy a woman.
Yeah,
to be in subservience to them.
Yeah, and he's just like, hey, are you looking for a blonde-haired white American woman? Today's your lucky day. I got one going on clearance, and I'm trying to unload her quick, fast, and in a hurry. So he sells them to a bunch of Arab dudes. James Bond, who is shackled, uses his laser watch to get free, and then goes and rescues Domino from the traveling band of Arab gentlemen.
In the meantime, he finds out from Largo that the first nuclear weapon is actually in DC.
Yeah.
And then he won't tell him where the second one is.
Right. This begins an action scene of James Bond and Domino trying to get away from the locals. And the action scene is it's on horseback, and I'm not a huge fan of it. At one point, I only bring it up because at one point they're in like a fort or something like this, a seaside fort. And at one point, there's nowhere to go but up. And then once you go up, they Bond and Domino are on a horse and they get cornered. So the only thing they can think to do is gallop the horse off the cliff
and into the sea.
And by God, it is the worst looking thing I've ever seen in my
the CGI
life.
On the horse falling. Couple things. There's a little movie we're probably going to review it one day on this podcast called True Lies. And True Lies depicts what happens when you actually try to get a horse to jump off of a building.
Yeah, yeah. Horses ain't dumb, yo.
Right. That horse in True Lies is like, fuck you. And he damn near throws Arnold Schwarzenegger off the side of a building. In this movie, the horse is like, fuck it. Let's go. Also, the horse is shown to be swimming away, no problem. That horse is fucking dead, guys.
Yeah, that horse is dead, man.
That horse fell 60 fucking feet into the sea.
Right.
You're dead.
Right.
Horse.
And you know why that horse is dead? Because those two wanted to use the horse to break their fall into the water. That horse is dead, man. Like, you'd have been better off just jumping off, and then we just believe that you made it. Like,
But yes, like you said, the CGI on the shot of the fall itself is fucking hilarious. You are not wrong about that in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, man. So Bond and Domino take a shower together.
Well, the military. So the message from Bond got through, and the military shows up just in the nick of time,
yeah,
to bail them out.
Yeah, and the first thing they do is just start blowing shit up.
Oh,
because that's what you do. And so they're on the boat, on the military boat. Felix is there, and they track Largo down to the location known as the Tears of Allah. Wait a minute. The Tears of Allah,
dun,
you
dun,
say?
Dun, 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 dun.
I have a necklace that I just happened to be wearing that I made sure to take with me on when I was being in prison.
Yeah, that Largo didn't get back from me when he put me up for fucking auction. Seems like a bit of an oversight.
Yeah. You would think that that Elon Musk over there would have thought of that, but
this is my literal map for the location of the other nuclear warhead. Oh, fuck, I forgot to get it from her. God, I'll give her a call. I've got some stuff at her place that I need to get out as well. She's got some things of mine. Oh, it'll be great to see her again, though. Wonder which of those dirty Arab guys bought her. I'll have to find out. Where did I put that nuclear missile?
Oh, shit. Bond and Felix infiltrate the underground facility. And the underground facility, I mean, this is the worst looking...
fake-ass Indiana Jones bullshit you've ever seen in your entire life?
Yeah, man. I swear to God, if you look hard enough, you can see the plastic seams on where these rocks have been folded together. It's just really bad.
It's very overdone. Like whereas the Indiana Jones movie they make these places look grandiose, but also like aged and realistic and weathered.
Yeah.
In this, it looks pristine.
Yeah, everything about it, man. Everything about it looks just. Like it looks like a movie from they're making a movie from the '50s on the moon. You know what I mean?
And like, they even got like the chlorine water in there as well.
Yeah.
Shit's been treated. No algae in this shit.
This is apparently there's a gunfight happens eventually, and I forget who it is. I think it's James who pushes the lightest looking heavy rock into the water to cause a distraction, and this just looks bad.
Bond like runs in and then runs out and then runs back in, but then there's a cave in, so he's gonna run it. Like, he's just going back and forth in this like little facility here. Meanwhile, yeah. Felix and the Marines are fucking holding shit down at the entrance.
Yeah. In the confusion, Largo makes a getaway with one of the warheads while the Navy ends up capturing the other one. Largo's underwater, Bond meets him, and then there's an underwater fight. I don't know what it is about this movie series and underwater fights. They're not cool, man. They're not.
Again, they do. I feel like they do a better job of it in this one.
They do, but it's still not. It's still not dynamic.
Oh, like, no, not at all, because they're moving in slow motion.
Right. Basically. They're moving at half speed, and because you can't, like, I don't know. There's something about an underwater fist fight that just doesn't do it for me. Like, I'd be very curious to hear about what Aquaman's underwater fights are like, because I'm not going to watch it. But, I can't imagine like, I just don't get it. Stop with the underwater fights. Well, they kind of have.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, they fight each other underwater. Just as Largo tries to detonate the bomb in his possession.
Try to detonate the bomb. Bond is able to disarm the bomb. But he has, like, Largo pinned up against this rock ball with, like, the fucking, like, water sled that they're using to transport this warhead. And then Largo goes to shoot Bond with a harpoon gun. Bond doesn't see him doing this. Like as he's pinning into the wall, he has his harpoon gun. And he's trying to kill Bond as Bond's trying to disarm the warhead. And then out of nowhere, so in the book and in the original Thunderball movie, Domino is the one that deals the fatal blow to Largo. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense in the way, in the context in which they lay it out in those films. It also happens here, but here it makes no sense why Domino would have just happened to come underwater in full scuba gear with the Marines to deliver this fatal harpoon blow to Largo.
Yeah, it's not, it's lazy is what it is. Like it just
doesn't make sense. Cause like I said, she's not obviously in the military. She's not involved with the fighting at all. Like Bond and Felix, like, stay on the ship. And she's like, all right. And then all of a sudden, right when Bond needs her the most, she appears as if from nowhere. And again, she's underwater, wearing fucking full scuba gear, flanked by two Marines.
Yeah,
I don't get it. Again, I understand you want to stick to your source material, but make it make sense.
That's it. You literally can do anything. Just make it make sense. And you're right, it doesn't. Domino kills him. Kills Largo. And then she gets her hero pose, and then we immediately cut to her diving into a pool. And she's got a couple more drinks. I don't know if they're Bloody Marys, but they're enjoying themselves by a pool. And Bond is like, "Nah, I'm never doing this again." And all of a sudden, Mr. Bean comes out of nowhere and he's like, M sent me because M said you are the best James Bond ever. And there's nobody better than you. And if you don't be James Bond anymore, who could be James Bond? Because no one else could be James Bond but you, James Bond. So
Did we get you for the sequel?
Right. And he was like, "No, I'm never doing that.
Never again.
And I can't remember if she says it. Does she say it? Does she say the title of the movie?
I think he's like, "Never again." She's like, "Never." And then like he kisses her and then he spins around. He faces the camera and like winks at the camera. And that's the closing shot to the film. Is that scene?
Shut up. Good God.
And it's over. And that's the fucking movie. Woof. Yeah, like I said, Octopussy fucking smoked this movie at the box office. And rightfully so, because Octopussy's not the best Bond movie in the entire world, but this is something else.
This is something else. I can't. I don't know what else to say about this. Don't watch it. Any final comments?
Is there anything that this movie did better than Thunderball?
Oh no. Not at all. Not at all. I honestly can't think of anything better off the top of my head. And I hated maybe the music underwater. The lazily Super Mario-esque do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Like, that music didn't fit in Thunderball, but no. I would watch Thunderball 11 times out of 10.
This movie sucks. They even managed to have better jetpack. Well, actually, no, Thunder, never mind. The jetpacks in this movie, no, they weren't better than the one in Thunderball because they were stupid.
Yeah.
like they literally were just a faster way to get Bond and Felix from the boat to the shore.
Yeah.
That was it. And the jetpack in Thunderball was not impressive anyway.
No.
It was real. That was what made it impressive. That was a real invention.
Right.
As opposed to this made-for-movie bullshit that they fucking did in this film. This movie sucks.
This movie's terrible, and don't watch it.
It's not worse than Die Another Day.
You know what? You're right. Die Another Day is really that bad.
Because Die Another Day has more to work with. It has no excuse for being shitty. This at least says an excuse for being shitty.
Yeah, wow. Ooh, gross. That's this film. Now, you might be saying to yourself, wow, they've done all the James Bond movies.
Oh, there's
they've
more
ranked
coming.
The James Bond movies. They even did one, the James Bond movie that wasn't a James Bond movie. They must be done. No, we're not. There's still another James Bond movie that we're going to do. I've never seen it.
Can we not do that one next?
Do you want to do it next and just get it over with?
No, because so here's my thoughts. We did not discuss this beforehand, obviously. So the next episode, we're going to do another list of some kind of what we don't know. We'll figure that out.
All right, I'm fine.
We'll do another list. And then for the next movie review, what I'd like to review is perhaps a movie that is even more accurate than the other non-James Bond, James Bond movie in terms of its James Bondiness.
All right.
And I am talking about the 1997 film classic, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, because that's a far better choice. We'll get to that other thing.
All right.
Because I just have to warn you that when we do, this movie was not fun to do. Never Say Never Again.
Right.
Austin Powers will be fun.
Yes.
I promise you that Fake Casino Royale will not be fun. Because I have seen that movie.
Oh, all right.
Well, and you are in for whatever the opposite of a treat is when it comes to that film. So again, next episode will be a list of some fashion, which we will figure out later and let you guys know. And if it's if we do it tournament style, then we'll open up the voting just like we did for the Bond Madness tournament for you guys to give us the initial seedings of whatever it is that we rank. But then the month after that will be Austin Powers, and that is the only Austin Powers movie
that we're good
because fuck the other two. But the first Austin Powers is the best homage to Bond, yes, that you could ever find.
All right, excellent. Well, the men with the golden tongues will return next month.